entry point was, let's make pharmacy more affordable for people in Ireland, and technology was going to be how we were going to do it.
Hello and welcome to episode 71 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, your host, Gary Fox. This week, I'm chatting to Shane O'Sullivan. Shane is the founder of Healthwave. Healthwave are revolutionizing, I would say that's not an overstatement, the pharmacy game in Ireland. And it was a really interesting chat for me personally, as I knew very little about that space. Shane spotted a gap in the market to completely rethink how pharmacies operate. In this chat, you're going to learn three main things: how Shane became a pharmacist and a computer programmer, how keeping a beginner's mindset helped him to totally disrupt the pharmacy space in Ireland, and why he got hate mail when he opened his first branch in Dundrum. This is my chat with Shane O'Sullivan, the founder of Healthwave. Shane, welcome to the pod.
Hey Gary, thanks for having me on.
We had a very unique start to the pod. I've never had a full demonstration of the product before. It was very cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, really, really impressive to see it in action, and we're excited to be able to share with patients finally and show it to you today. But yeah, I mean, comparing the pharmacy of the past to the pharmacy of the future, you know, it's super exciting.
So tell me a little bit, we should kind of introduce yourself first, because tell me a little bit about A, number one, where we're sitting, and B, number two, what you guys do.
So right now we're sitting in Healthwave's headquarters in Dundrum in Dublin. We're actually using one of our patient consultation rooms for this interview. But Healthwave is a digital pharmacy that is revolutionising the patient experience here in Ireland and across Europe in the next year or two. So what we do is we dispense people's monthly medicines for things such as blood pressure, diabetes, asthma, and we auto ship their orders every month to them anywhere in Ireland. And we do this, you know, at a much cheaper price than a traditional pharmacy, and also using our new dispensing system called PillPods. So instead of getting a number of boxes of medicines for you to go home and sort yourself, we now send you a chronological roll of pods that you just take each morning. So you pull the roll and take the next pod, which has the medicines that you are due to take for that particular time. So we've, you know, quite a different approach to pharmacy. It's all online. You register online, you communicate with our pharmacists on your phone using text message or WhatsApp, and your medicines come to you by courier each month.
That's how I want to chat to my pharmacist, by WhatsApp or message. That seems great. And
well, you know, I've often had situations where friends and family send me a WhatsApp with a question about their child or a picture of a rash and what should I do. And you know, I've often thought, well, shouldn't that be the way it is? You should be able to get expert advice on WhatsApp from your pharmacist. Just because they're not your friend doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to do that. And you know, that's the approach we take here. Once you join and become a member, our pharmacists are available every day to you by WhatsApp.
Yeah, it just makes total sense. Like, it's one of those things that you're like, yeah, that when you say, and when you showed me the machine, you know, it's kind of hard to picture these things sometimes, you know, from the outside looking in. But when you showed me the machine, it's just, it makes such sense. So it just removes a lot of the heartache and a lot of the work, I guess, for you guys.
Yeah, you know, it's in terms of processes, pharmacy hasn't really changed a lot since its inauguration, really. I mean, we've obviously moved from, you know, back in my great-grandfather's day in Callan and Kilkenny to, you know, where he was compounding. So, you know, when a patient comes in, he would listen to your symptoms and make you a potion or a lotion. So we obviously moved on from that to boxes of tablets and tubes of creams that are, you know, handed out in bags by pharmacies. But, you know, other than that, we haven't really changed the process a whole lot. So the PillPod system is a huge leap forward. And as you saw, now we have this machine full of all the pills that patient could possibly require. You know, being dispensed automatically and robotically and checked by machine learning models. So, you know, it really is futuristic stuff and takes a lot of the pressure off pharmacists that are, you know, while the tasks may not be that complicated, they are quite draining, you know, keeping your focus mentally for, you know, 8-9 hours straight, which is the case in a lot of pharmacies. You know, fatigue does set in, mistakes do happen. So, you know, anything we can do operationally to make the job of the pharmacist less mentally taxing, I think, you know, is a good thing for patients. Also, frees up their time, you know, and possibly we will get back to those days like my great-grandfather where he was just stood at the counter talking to his patients, you know, all day long. You know, I think we've lost a bit of that over the last few decades where pharmacists are just so busy getting orders out in the back of the shop and, you know, processing paperwork and dealing with queries on the phone with doctors that, you know, we've lost a bit of that personal touch. And I think by streamlining operations using a system like PillPods, then, you know, our pharmacists have much more time to engage with patients and, you know, just provide a better level of care, really.
So the entrepreneur experiment is obviously the title of the thing, and it might seem strange to have a pharmacist on, but we touched on it briefly just before we kicked off. You've a bit of an interesting backstory as not just a pharmacist. How did, we'll chat about your pharmacy first. Did you always kind of want to be a pharmacist that owned his own business, or was it the other way around?
No, I probably came at it more from a science angle. In school, loved chemistry, favorite subject by a long way. You know, probably due in part to a really good chemistry teacher. But yeah, I mean, when coming towards leaving Cert CAO, you know, just wanted to do something that used chemistry. And, you know, pharmacy seemed like a good fit because there was a job at the end of it. I had seen people going into pure chemistry and, you know, ending up kind of on this treadmill of research, and which I didn't want to do. I wanted something at the end of it. So pharmacy seemed to kind of marry both together. And, you know, I loved the course, really sciencey and challenging. But yeah, and I didn't really have any business aspirations either, I would have said at the time, even going through college. I actually, coming towards final year, almost took a PhD position in pharmacy. So, you know, it really wasn't until I got out working in the retail pharmacy sector that I possibly started thinking about that. But my first thoughts working in retail pharmacy were, oh my God, these systems are so bad. You know, we're printing everything on dot matrix printers. I don't know if you've ever been unfortunate enough to use one, but they last a few weeks. You know, you just feel like throwing them at the wall.
Really?
And, you know, they're still in use, which is incredible. And you know, just the software we're using in pharmacies still is just really, really backwards. Doesn't communicate with anything outside of the pharmacy. So yeah, I think, you know, once I got started working, I was just thinking the tech is really bad.
Were you a techie? Was this something you were like, oh, I've a better system than this at home?
Yeah, you know, big into Apple. Had all the iPhones, you know, the latest MacBook always. So, you know, really into gadgets and, you know, started getting into apps once the App Store came out. You know, just thought it was really cool how you could just do so much even on your phone or an iPad, and then going into work each morning to, you know, these really clunky software systems. So, yeah, I would definitely say I was a kind of a tech geek, but so yeah, that kind of culminated in maybe late 2012, where I just kind of had enough of pharmacy and just quit my job and wanted to try and become an app developer, which, you know, didn't go down too well with my wife.
How did that conversation go? I'm leaving my really great high paying job to become an app developer.
Yeah, not good, because trying to explain to someone what an app developer even is back then in 2012, you know, it was all relatively new.
That was early, I think 2008 was the first iPhone, 2008, 2007.
Yeah, actually, you know, and at the time my wife actually didn't even have a smartphone. She had the trusted Nokia 3310.
Nice.
Which I was working on getting her to change. So like, she just really didn't get it. Apps, didn't understand it, didn't understand how you could possibly make money off it. But I, you know, I persevered, and I took this year, set myself a challenge of making an app and learning to code. And, you know, like one of the best parts of the whole thing was just the mental challenge of learning something new, having to conquer something, the sense of achievement, even if it is just making yourself a little app, you know. And it's something I would encourage every person or entrepreneur to do, is to, you know, try and master something. Just even from a mental health point of view, is just so rewarding.
Be a beginner again. Yeah.
And you know, you lose that a bit when you're just doing the 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, and you know you get very comfortable in your job. You know how to do it inside out. You're really good at it. So you do lose that sense of a challenge. And so I really loved that about that year, where, you know, there was something every day I got stuck on, could not figure it out. You know, going to bed, staring at the ceiling, still thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't that button working? You know, and so on. Did that for a year. And then, you know, there was a few months of Apple payouts, you know, 25, 27, 28 euro coming in a month. And, you know, I think at that point my wife kind of won. And, you know, she said, you know, this can't go on forever. We can't live on 28 euro a month. So, but you know, everything's a stepping stone in my mind. And,
what was the app you developed?
I developed an app, called GAA Journal, which essentially allowed you to, tweet scores when you're at a GAA match.
So that was not what I thought you were going to say. Yeah.
So again, it was, just another kind of interest of mine is going to hurling matches, a big Cork hurling supporter. But there, at the time, again, there was, you know, Twitter was kind of getting going, and you'd see, you know, if there was a match on and you were working, it was kind of quite hard to follow a game at the time. And, you know, there might've been someone at the game that was, you know, you might see the odd tweet, great score from Hoggy or something like that.
But especially local GAA. Yeah, but
you have no idea, like, what's the actual score right now?
Yeah.
How much time has gone, things like that. So my app was, visually it looked like the scoreboard that you'd see at a match, but it had buttons on it. So you, at the start, entered your two teams that were playing, you started a timer, and then every time someone scored, you hit a button and it automatically sent it to Twitter
with
the score and the time.
So as long as there was someone there at the match with the app,
yeah,
you could update it.
So, you know, for a while it was me at the match. And then, you know, I thought it went pretty well. You know, a good few of the county PROs were onto me, and they were using it. You know, a lot of the inter-county teams were using it. You know, you'd have, for example, a PRO might have to be updating 5 or 6 games on a Saturday for across different age grades. So this just made their life easier. That was the app, you know, and it's still something I'm really proud of, to have taken something from start to finish, launch something, even if it was only 99 cent.
But it's that feeling, isn't it? You talked about the beginner feeling, that starting with zero and ending up with one, just going the whole journey and seeing something complete at the end.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think I started to see towards the end of that year as well that, you know, to do something like that properly, you know, it does take a lot of time. You start getting into things like, the more users you have, you start getting into, you know, dealing with feedback, feature requests, bugs and all that, which, you know, I wasn't really experienced in. Or so, you know, I think to go any further with it would have been a kind of proper full-time thing, and it wasn't, you know, generating an awful lot of money. So after that year, decided, look, I definitely love technology, and I've seen even with this year-long experiment, how it can change and improve an experience for someone. It happened to be GAA, but I said, look, let's give the pharmacy thing another bash.
Did it reframe pharmacy for you? Did it reframe the whole industry?
It did, because I think, you know, I think a misconception often with entrepreneurs is that to start a company, you need to be a coder. But you don't really, you need to understand how coding works. Mm. And that year gave me that. So like I understood things like databases, APIs, different programming languages, the costs associated with managing servers, how long something should take. So that's
a key one.
That's a big one.
That's huge.
You know, managing developers like I do now, like developers are notorious for being bad estimators of how long something's going to take. And it's, you know, it's not really their fault. Things just take on a life of their own usually when it comes to coding, because there's bugs and things happen. But just having that baseline of, okay, I think if I was doing it, I'd probably have it done by now.
But that's huge. And I think when you start any business, you should know how the nuts and bolts work. You don't even have to be able to see the engine of the car, but you need to know how long it should take you.
Yeah. And just knowing, when I got back into pharmacy, back into those clunky systems, knowing that, okay, there are actually better ways of doing this. I've actually seen some of them, I've used some of them. Mm. Being able to then go to a developer with a brief and say, here's what I want to do. Here's how I wanted to work. And here, look, I think we could use these technologies to do it.
It must change your conversation with them as well. They must kind of go, okay, he knows exactly what he's talking about. And more importantly, he tell me exactly what he wants.
Exactly. And like developers are very much like computers. They will do exactly what you tell them. So it's very important that you give clear instruction. Like you can't come back to a developer 2 weeks into a 3 week sprint and say, oh, I don't like the way that works, because they will just say, well, here's the list of things you asked me to do, and this is exactly what I've done. Mm. So managing developers is very different to managing other staff. I find managing other staff, you know, it can be more of a personal thing, and, you know, just keeping people motivated, happy in their job, work-life balance, all that kind of stuff. Developers just want to go home into their bunker and code based on, you know, the few things you asked them to do when they stuck their head up for a few hours.
Yeah. No ambiguity, ones and zeros, exactly. It is what it is.
So definitely, you know, being able to get that clear direction was a big help. I think if you're coming at it, if you just came along and said, you know, I want to build a pharmacy app, and that's all you said to someone, you know, I think you'd spend an awful time and money.
Where to even start? And when you came back into pharmacy then, was that your goal? Were you kind of going, I'm going to build a technology-based pharmacy?
It was, but it was probably a secondary goal at the time. I think at the time, and towards the end of my time in pharmacy in 2012, there was a lot of kind of negativity from patients around the price of drugs. So I felt that was going to be a good kind of entry point, a good entry message was going to be a low-cost pharmacy. So what we were hearing a lot at the time was people basically coming back from Spain, having got a year's worth of their drugs and, you know, saying, why can't you do it at this price? You know, my box says Pfizer, so it is the one you're giving me. Why are they different? Why is the price not the same? That's a very hard thing to explain or defend even. I wasn't enjoying that. It wasn't up to me either what we charged. I just worked for a company. So, you know, I had no control over that. I found that frustrating as well. So I think that was always going to be the entry point was, let's make pharmacy more affordable for people in Ireland. And technology was going to be how we were going to do it.
Okay. And what was the next steps? Your poor wife was a year into this experiment. What did you go back and say, I'm going to start my own pharmacy? Did you go back work for the pharmacist, or what way did you approach it?
So I let her relax for a few months, and I I went locuming, which just means that you take odd days work here and there in different pharmacies. So I worked locumed for a few months around Munster. You know, I worked in a lot of the big chains. Just seeing how good pharmacies are run, and also how good pharmacies are inefficient, and identifying opportunities there. Obviously, to launch a low-cost pharmacy, you need to be able to save and cut costs in some way. So, you know, I worked in as many different types of pharmacies as I could in that few months. Again, would recommend that to everyone starting up is, you know, get experience. You know, I've read Colin Harriman's book about coffee shops, and, you know, he says the amount of people that call him up and say they want to start a coffee shop, and they've never worked in one. You know, I think it's a good analogy. You should have worked in a coffee shop if you want to open one. So he said that's what I did for a few months. And then I kind of probably took another month then of spreadsheet work. You know, here's what pharmacies are charging. Here's what they're buying the stuff for. How can we, you know, how low can we bring the prices down and still, you know, make a profit? So that was kind of a few months of that, and being kind of happy with the model that it was going to work. And then I decided that for it to have any chance of success, it had to be in Dublin. So that was the next bombshell for my wife.
Where were you living at the time?
We were living in Cork.
Okay.
So I told her I'm moving to Dublin to start a pharmacy. So I moved to Dublin on my own for about 6 months.
Okay.
And started it up in December 2013.
Was that a density issue, or was that you'd done your research in terms of numbers of footfall, or how did you decide Dublin? Because Cork's quite a large city as well.
Cork is quite large, yeah, but I mean, Dublin at the time you had probably 1.1, 1.2 million people. And I think, you know, if we could get the message out at all, then we'd such a huge audience. And the location we picked, which was another part of it, was, you know, Dundrum town centre, where everyone in the country knows, not to mind Dublin, right across from a Lewis stop, very accessible, loads of parking. So I just felt we just had a much bigger market in Dublin. And also, I guess, if we did start in Cork, maybe someone would come along and do it in Dublin. Okay. So, you know, I wanted to be the first mover and in the biggest market possible, I think, at the time. Mm.
And did you feel the low-cost pharmacy was going to kind of take the industry by storm? Do you think this was going to cause a lot of ripples as well? Because I can't imagine they were delighted to see you coming in and going, okay, I'm going to undercut everyone by X percent.
Yeah, but we were prepared for that. I mean, like, disruption doesn't tend to be well received by competitors in any industry. That's just the way it goes. But, you know, I said to myself before getting into it that if we just focus on our patients and making sure they're happy, then nothing else really matters. So if, you know, if we're saving people money and they're taking their medicines when before they couldn't because they couldn't afford it, then that's all I needed. And, you know, like within a few weeks, we were getting those stories back. You know, we're getting thank you notes. I was not taking my medicines for a few months, my inhalers, because I had to pay my electricity bill, was one we got that really kind of hit me. Wow. People had been like struggling for breath because the inhalers in the local pharmacy were too dear. So, you know, there was a lot of stories of that. And, you know, so like, obviously there's pushback and unrest, but like all you got to do is read some of these thank you cards and notes and it keeps you going, you know. And that, you know, that's still our focus today, making sure people everywhere have access to affordable medicine. You know, I think it should be a right, really.
And like where we are is a very kind of high profile location. So how did you kind of get going? Like how did you go, okay, I'm going to go to Dundrum, I'm going to take this, because it's a massive unit. Like it must have been a big decision.
It was, but, you know, I think our timing was good. You know, it was end of 2013. People were coming out of recession. Money was tight. People were looking at ways of saving money. So, I think we launched at a really good time. We got a lot of coverage at the time as well. There was no one had thought of doing this before. Like, cheap medicines just really kind of caught people's attention. It really resonated with consumers in Ireland who felt that they had been ripped off. Our timing just was really good, I think. I often say, I think if we had launched a low-cost pharmacy, you know, in 2016 or 2018, it probably wouldn't have worked. Mm. In terms of getting set up, and from an entrepreneurial point of view, we had this kind of mad idea that we could seed ourselves by charging a membership fee. So what we did was we said, okay, we're going to give you really, really good price medicines, but we're going to charge you €25 to join. Mm. And then we bet everything on getting coverage and everyone in Dublin hearing about it.
It's a good hook, actually. I like that.
And you know, as I said, the timing just really worked in our favor. We're a really good PR company from Cork at the time, Cameo, and you know, we were in every paper. We were on the TV. We were, you know, you couldn't have not seen us in January 2014. And then, you know, thousands of people just started joining, and that was how we got going then, because they were all giving us €25
right.
to join. And you know, and we've kept that model. Then it's of a membership model, so you pay to be in the club, and you get all these really good benefits like cheap medicines delivered to your door, and now pill pods. We've changed it slightly this year. We've moved to a monthly membership, so it's not a yearly thing anymore. So it's $2.99 a month instead. You know, more in line with things like people are used to paying for, like Spotify, Netflix.
Clever. I was going to ask you why.
So, you know, people are becoming used to the kind of subscription economy, I think. Things like Amazon Prime, where you know, you can use the service, but it's better if you become a member, pay a monthly fee, you know, you get quicker delivery, better prices. You know, it's along those lines, I think, is how we think about the membership. But it was definitely how we got started.
That must, because you've taken like two of my next questions, I was going like, why did you choose that? And how did you get the message out? And why did you choose membership model at the time?
I think
now it seems obvious with all these kind of like, you know, Spotify, Amazon Primes, Netflix of the world. But at the time, I said that was quite kind of, wait, I have to pay to join the pharmacy?
Well, obviously, the first reason was cash flow and funding the business. That was one reason, definitely. But the other one is just the kind of psychology of being part of a club is very strong. And I don't know about you, but like, I have Amazon Prime. And since I have Amazon Prime, I spend more on Amazon. I don't price check anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just the first place
same.
I go.
Exact same. You know? Yeah,
and
exact same.
I have no idea if something is cheaper somewhere else. It probably is. But I'm a member, so I'm going to use... You're going to use my membership.
Has that something you researched at the time? Because I mean, now it seems obvious because it's a good idea, but back in 2012, it still would have been pretty new. Is that something you stumbled across or something?
Yeah, there's some good, there's some good essays out there, you know, on Jeff Bezos and kind of what he was thinking about Prime at the time. And, you know, he had this kind of famous meeting in a log cabin with a few of his execs when they came up with Prime. And, you know, he just understood the psychology so well. And there's other good examples as well of membership models working. But what we really wanted to achieve was this kind of health club where people felt they belonged to something and that they were getting a better standard of care by being part of this club, essentially. Yeah.
Your health is one of those things you kind of do want to invest, you know, your time in, and you want to feel cared for, I think, mm-hmm. you know, because a lot of it is very transactional. So you got, did that hook people? Did that kind of message of membership, what drove such massive PR coverage? Because I think that's the number one question a lot of people have, is that they have an idea for a business, they start, and then it's flat. They expect to get the coverage you got. So what was different?
I really believe the timing was critical. There are times a message will work and there are times it won't. And I just think that consumers reading about us, we were addressing a monthly outlay that every household had, which is a medicine bill. I think if you came along and addressed any of the monthly bills in a house, electricity, you know, broadband, phone, any of those things, if you came along and said, we're a company doing that half price, I think you would have got an awful lot of attention in 2014. We just happened to pick medicine. And, you know, the other thing I would say is we were really transparent and genuine. You know, I am a trained pharmacist. I worked in a lot of pharmacies. I believed they were charging too much money. I started a pharmacy to address that. And that's all the truth. And then what we did in terms of transparency was we published our prices, which you may think sounds, so what? But that's what annoyed competitors the most at the time.
I was going to ask you, was there much pushback? Because I imagine they were delighted to see you come on.
The biggest pushback was kind of strangely over this price list. So when you went onto our website at the time, what you saw was, you know, just hundreds of medicines and the member price when you join, here's what you'll pay. Again, that was another part of it because people were reading about us in the papers and then they were going online and they were able to see, oh, I'm saving 500 euro a year here.
Mm. It's a compelling message.
And like that all came from the fact that as an industry, pharmacies just seemed a bit kind of secretive about pricing. So when you went into a pharmacy and you handed in your prescription, you know, there's this kind of like 10 or 15 minute.
I know exactly what you're going
to
say.
I wonder what number they're going to come back to me with.
I had that only 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, literally.
And that's, you know, no, I don't think anyone really thought about it at the time. When it was going on, it was just, that's just the way pharmacies were. And
it's still like that. I literally, if they had said to me 6 or 60, I wouldn't have known. And I kind of would have just handed over the card. I wouldn't have, it's still.
Yeah. You know, and you get some explanations. Oh, that's a hard medicine to source or something, but which doesn't really mean anything to you.
You don't care.
You know, you're not an expert in medicine. That was a really, really simple thing we wanted to do at the start, was be transparent. And you can come in, the prices was on our windows here in Dundrum. You could stand outside and decide whether or not you even want to come in based on the prices. You know, so more like a restaurant, which, you know, you wouldn't go sit down for a meal and order three courses if you didn't know the prices, I don't think. This was really basic stuff to me at the time. But I would say that's what kind of upset the industry the most, was there was someone out there telling patients what their medicines cost.
Don't ask, don't tell kind of industry? Was a bit of a kind of a, you know, we're all in this together, you know, keep the prices at a set fee and everyone's happy?
I don't know. I don't think anyone really just really thought about it, or I don't think anyone really thought about the patient enough in the whole pharmacy experience back then. When they should have been the center of the experience. So like, I don't know, as a pharmacist, you know, have you walked out on the street of your pharmacy, walked in the front door and just experienced it as a patient? Have you ever tried that? Have you tried to phone your pharmacy and be put on hold for 5 minutes? Have you, you know, have you tested your own experience? I don't think anyone had done that really. Because if they had, they would have spotted the obvious things, like it's crazy that the patients don't know how much their bill is going to be. That was the bulk of the issues we had at the start.
Did you get any pushback? Did anyone kind of call you out and go, here, what are you doing?
Yeah, we did. You know, at the time, it was a bit mad. 2014, to be honest. And, you know, I would say to entrepreneurs, you got to be prepared for rough times and good times. But 2014 was definitely a roller coaster. I mean, we had a lot of hate mail, would you believe? Which, you know, I suppose nowadays you see more of it online on social media, and it's kind of almost been normalized. But yeah, back then, you know, getting sent letters from pharmacists, I found kind of
kind of
bizarre. But
what were they like? What was like? Did they cut the letters out of the newspaper, or were they sitting down to like write you a letter going, "Dear Shane, I hate you for the following reason," like with a handwritten, or what way did it come?
Yeah, just anonymous. We had a couple of handwritten anonymous notes. Things like I can't feed my children because of you was one of them. So, you know, like these things happen, and, you know, it's not something I could relate to. You know, it's not something I would ever consider doing myself in terms of sending someone an anonymous letter. But, you know, people, you know, that's what makes life interesting. I think people react differently to things. They react differently to stress. You don't know what's going on in people's lives.
Yeah. Did you know then going, oh, we're onto something here. We're clearly, you're getting a reaction one way or the other.
I knew we were onto something because of the amount of people that were joining up. You know, it was just going way better than we ever thought it would.
Hmm.
And that was my focus, you know, these letters coming in. You know, I'll keep them and I'll read them someday.
It's fuel, I think, for a lot of people.
You know, you can't get too sidetracked by those things. And I think what people didn't realize at the time was the pharmacy is a really strong market in Ireland. And, we were targeting a certain cohort of people that take repeat medicines, you know, probably in their 50s. For a certain number of conditions. And, you know, I think when we launched, probably with all the coverage, I think people got spooked that all their customers were going to be gone tomorrow, which, you know, that's never going to be the case. There is, like, our service is brilliant for people that like to get their medicines delivered, to find it hard to manage their medicines, that are into tech, that like digital, you know, like digital banking, all that kind of stuff. You know, there's people then that that like going to their local pharmacy for the chat, and that's fine too. You know, so I would think I've always thought that, you know, there's room for both. But yeah, you know, people were just probably not thinking straight at the time.
And how did you marry then your love of tech with the pharmacy? So you started off with the low cost message, which has clearly hit the nail on the head in 2014. You seem to have changed now towards more of a tech focus. So how did you evolve into that?
Yeah, so I suppose for the first few years, the tech side of things was things like the joining up process. You know, we needed to, we were charging membership fees. So we had to build a platform that now managed subscription payments, you know, updating credit cards, cancelling subscriptions, just that whole user registration process, making sure they're getting emails from time to time, all that kind of stuff. So I think the first year was definitely all that kind of stuff. Then year two, we launched nationwide delivery. So first time in Ireland, you could get your medicines delivered anywhere in Ireland. And we partnered with Unpost to do that, and we still work with them. So again, that brought another tech challenge, in that we needed to build a kind of a order management system for that. Essentially, because we were the first people doing this with medicines, we had to be the best, and we had to almost kind of write our own standards for this. So we wanted our medicine delivery system to just be, you know, fully auditable, trackable, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, year two, we were building that, whereby orders being sent out, patients getting text messages now with tracking numbers. We know where the parcels are at all times, all that kind of stuff. So, that, you know, there was a good bit of work in that. So I would say the first few years was just kind of the nuts and bolts of the operation, really, and just making sure everything was really slick, and just allowing the pharmacists here to be able to kind of get on with their job, and, you know, that in the background patients are getting all these updates that they need, their texts and all that. And then after that, then, so I would say maybe 2016, 2017 was when we really started turning to digital as, you know, kind of an engagement strategy, really. And what I mean by that is that we, you know, being able to WhatsApp your pharmacist, like I said at the start, bringing that to life, really, was what we started working on back then. So, yeah, our goal at the time was that we wanted people to be able to text or WhatsApp us from the phone. At the time, there was no WhatsApp API publicly available, so it was all SMS at the time. So we built a system where people could text us, but the big thing was that it was two-way. So if you sent a text, there was a pharmacist at the other end actually texting you back.
That's so rare, though, as well. That's even now, that's very rare.
It is very rare. I mean, what you'll find now on a few of the bigger pharmacy websites is possibly, a chat window. A lot of them is just a contact form, really, where you get an email back later or something like that. So we basically wanted to connect patients and pharmacists in real time, over text message, and we chose text message because of our demographic. You know, at the time you could have pretty easily done it on Facebook Messenger or, you know, a live chat widget that you see on many websites. And we chose text, which kind of raised a few eyebrows with kind of tech people I talked to, but just seeing our patients come in through the door, you know, a lot of them didn't have smartphones. So text message is actually it's an amazing channel. The open rates are incredible.
Yeah.
Text messages are all opened pretty much.
Especially now when it's quite rare to get one, considering, you know, everyone's moved on to other things. Yeah. I think that's interesting, though. A lot of companies definitely build the solution for who they think their customer is, as opposed to you knowing exactly who your customer was.
Yeah, you know, and the thing, you know, when you do have a startup and it's, you know, you're getting kind of some traction, you start getting advice solicited, and you know, I used to get a lot of stuff on LinkedIn from people saying I needed an app, and you know, we still don't have an app, because
it's ironic,
you know, I've no idea how we get people to download it.
Like, there is that element of friction. There really is.
So when I think digital, it's you know, you're communicating with us from your phone in some way. It's mainly text message, and it's worked really well for us because everyone has it. It just works no matter what your phone is. You can take a phone out of the drawer from 10 years ago, it'll have text message. So yeah, we built a lot of stuff on SMS, the two-way connections with the pharmacist, also all our notifications, like you need a new prescription next time, your order's on the way, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I guess it was 2019 then when we really started getting into AI and that kind of stuff. And, you know, instead of having 100% of interactions with real people, there was possibly scenarios where we could triage, and we could, you know, maybe the person can actually deal with this query themselves if we set the system up in a certain way. Like, an example would be, people might want to check a price. You know, there's probably no need for a pharmacist to be on that particular conversation. So what we did was we automated a lot of those tasks. So based on we analyzed the conversations we had for the last couple of years. You can see all the common queries, and then we identified, you know, a subset that could be automated into a flow. So price queries, people wanting to know, are we open? you know, people looking for a tax printout, all that kind of stuff. So slowly you start to automate processes, and all the time you're freeing up your pharmacists, you know. So that, you know, that probably all leads us on to 2020, this kind of year from hell for a lot of people, but it's been amazing for us from a pharmacy technology point of view, I must say. It's just moved everything on more than we could ever have hoped for. Two things, really. I think, you know, as an industry, as I said at the start, we've been pretty backwards in terms of very much paper-based. Prescriptions are all written on paper. Some of them still handwritten by a doctor, physically brought from the doctor to the pharmacy. Paper receipts, you know, fax machines still being used.
Still on the go.
Still on the go. Wow. So COVID finally put an end to some of that emergency legislation, which, you know, we're hoping is here to stay. I presume it will stay. But so finally we got electronic prescriptions in Ireland for the first time.
That was just gone.
Yeah.
Wow.
2020. So yeah. So what happened was they legalized doctors emailing prescriptions to pharmacies.
And why was that not before? Why was...
You know, I think there's been a lot of overthinking about the whole thing. It's been in use in other countries for decades, but
just seems so obvious.
You know, there's concerns about kind of forgeries and people being able to produce a counterfeit electronic prescription. For example, in the north, how they do it is an electronic prescription is sent from the doctor to the pharmacy, but then you actually turn up with the barcode.
Oh, so they scanned, match each other.
So they know,
okay,
so they know it's you. So I think, you know, they just hadn't really ironed out all the details of how the system would work. So what they did was they essentially, I think, legalized a kind of a compromise solution whereby they said you can email each other.
Hmm.
You know, it's not a full-blown electronic prescription system. You know, that is planned under under Sláintecare and eHealth Ireland are doing a lot of work on that. So right now we've got this secure email system called HealthMail, where only GPs and pharmacists in Ireland have access to it.
Okay.
So if you sent an email from your personal Gmail to our HealthMail, it'll bounce.
Okay.
So it's a locked down email system.
So they're authorized, they're kind of matched off against each other. Okay.
But what that did anyway was it just really streamlined the patient experience from our point of view. So someone goes to a doctor, or what was happening at the time was they were having a video consultation with the doctor. Now the prescription was landing in our inbox 5 minutes later electronically, and we were shipping it out that day. So everything just got much quicker. From patient point of view, no queuing, no driving.
Mm.
No waiting around.
It's funny how COVID has transformed a lot of industries for the better. Stuff that was coming like 5-10 years time, suddenly it's here.
Yeah. So we really hope that will stay. I think, just judging by the curve of how prescriptions are sent in the last few months, it's, you know, the uptake on this use of this health mail system is just, you know, it's exponential. So the GPs are all using it now. The pharmacies are all using it. So I don't think there's any going back. You know, seeing a paper prescription now is kind of becoming rare, which is, you know, a source of joy for many pharmacists, I'd imagine.
It just makes no sense. They write to you, person's to come, hand it in to you. Then you have to go back while the person's there and get it. And it just makes no sense.
Yeah. And, you know, it was probably the kind of missing piece of the digital pharmacy experience that we've been trying to build. Everything else was very digital. Like, you join up on our website, they can text the pharmacist whenever you want. You know, your order is sent and you're getting tracking notifications, all very digital. But every 6 months you had to go and collect this piece of paper from your GP and pop it in the post to us. So now you're going to a post office. So that experience was just really poor. But there was nothing we could do about it. Mm. you know, we just had to, you know, and it, you know, when you're doing a startup, you're always looking for sources of churn, and you know, where, at what point in your in the experience is the consumer maybe going to wobble or say, oh, it's easier to go somewhere else?
Yeah, get that moment of friction where they're like, oh, I'll just do it the other way.
So you know, even though we had this membership and this club that people really love being a part of, this whole having to go to a GP and a post office and stuff was a bit broken. And, you know, for the majority of people, they still did it because of the amount of money they're saving by using us. But you definitely have people that churn then because they just, oh, I'll just go to the pharmacy that's in front of me instead. So, you know, it definitely really benefiting us in that regard, bringing the whole thing fully digital. And then the other thing then was something that we've been planning for a few years, but COVID just, I think, just kind of brought everything forward, was the experience you get when you receive your delivery. So, you know, prior to 2020, when you order from HealthWave, you would, let's say you're on five different medicines, you got five different boxes of medicines, each one had a sticker on it, and then you kind of self-manage that. So each morning you took maybe one of each, or you might have to take one in the evening, or so, you know, there was kind of room for error there. Some people would even fill their own pill boxes with the days of the week on it. Again, not something that pharmacists particularly like, because you know, there's room for someone putting the wrong tablet in the wrong day and so forth. So we thought that experience could be better. It could be simpler. The patient should have less to think about, really. So we launched our latest service called Pill Pods to address that and kind of bring the whole experience full circle. So what Pill Pods are really is just a chronological roll of pods. So you might, if you've five medicines each day, you would get a roll of 28 pods each morning. You just tear the next one off. It has the date, the day, and the time on it, and you just take whatever pills are inside it. You don't even have to think about it. So it's very easy to see whether you've taken your pills yesterday or the day before, because you can see the date on it, and you just literally take them one by one each day.
I love the fact that it's in the box and it just dispenses one by one, so you can see exactly, okay, well, there's today's, pull it out, take it, gone.
Yeah. So we, you know, it's been in the pipeline for a while, but we got the dispensing machinery in and got it all tested during the kind of height of the lockdown. So, you know, it's great to get going with it, and the feedback's been amazing. You know, it's particularly good for people that are maybe caring for elder parents. You know, so like before, they might have had to go to the pharmacy and collect their parents' medicines each month, and then, you know, kind of probably there's a bit of worry there, are they taking everything correctly? You know, they might be living on their own, or, you know, they maybe have a home help coming in for a few hours a week, but it's, you know, there's still that worry. So with the pill pod system being, you know, gets delivered to their parents each month, and they literally just have to take one pod each morning and take the pills inside. So I think, you know, it's the feedback from those kind of people caring for parents has been really nice to hear. You know, it's just one less thing for them to worry about.
It must, I'll ask you two last questions before we finish up. The last one is going to be, ask you to recommend a book for people that's going to help you on your journey, either personally or professionally. And then the second last question is, this must free up an awful lot of time for your pharmacists on premise. So how do you see that changing in the future? Like, how do you see the pharmacist's role evolving?
My thinking when I think about pharmacy and the future of pharmacy is back to this. You should be able to WhatsApp your pharmacist. You should be able to send them a picture of a rash. Ask them a question. Can I have a drink tonight with these medicines? Whatever it is. That's one I get a lot myself.
I would say that's a common one.
So that's the goal. And in order to do that, the pharmacist needs to be at all of your touch points, there needs to be a pharmacist. If patients are texting, if they're connecting on WhatsApp, the pharmacist needs to be at the other end. And to do that, the pharmacist needs to be freed up. So this the new system we've invested in, you know, instead of pharmacists checking 100% of prescriptions and, you know, having to visually inspect everything manually, we've got camera technology now that's doing a lot of that. So it's really freeing up their time, and it's only calling pharmacists, you know, every now and again to check something it's unsure of, which means the pharmacists can, you know, sit down and actually interact with our patients on across all the various digital channels. So, you know, we think we're going to be able to provide a much better level of care. You're always going to be dealing with a pharmacist, an expert, someone that's trained for 6 years, no matter how you contact us.
So it's not about doing away with pharmacists, just about freeing them up to be able to do more high value things.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what book would you recommend for people to help them on kind of their journey, either professionally or personally?
Probably a couple of books. A book I really like is by Tom Peters called The Excellence Dividend. And it's a really good thing to focus your mind on customer service, but it applies to everything really in a startup or a company. And the point of the book really is that, you know, everything you do should be at the highest level possible. You know, your canteen should be clean. Mm-hmm. Your toilet should be clean, even if it's only seen by the staff.
I always think that when I walk into somewhere and just the windows are dirty or the door is dirty, I'm kind of like, that's the very first touch point. You know, it doesn't matter how good it is inside, it's just that's your very first thing.
Yeah. So it's basically, now it's kind of repetitive, the book, but it's basically having this word excellence in your head all the time. Mm. Everything you're doing, and it's a message for all your employees, everything you're doing, you know, make it excellent.
How you do anything is how you do everything. I love that phrase. I just keep coming back to that.
So I really like that book, and I check in on it every now and again. But you know, in terms of more general startup stuff, you know, I would have read all the usual suspects, like the Lean Startup.
Comes up a lot. That's had a huge impact for a lot of people.
And you know, when I read that, Eric Ries was actually came to Dublin and did a talk on it. So it seemed really topical at the time. But you know, that was a really good book. I think at the start, you probably have one skill. You're good at something. Maybe it's pharmacy or coding, but you know you're going to have to put on a lot of different hats as you go through the startup journey. And I think the Lean Startup and the kind of canvas that goes along with it is just a really nice one pager to be able to kind of glance at every now and again. How are we? Because you know you're kind of battling on a few different fronts. You know, you're trying to attract customers, you're trying to keep your staff happy, you're trying to keep cash flow. You know, there's so many different things to think of. So I think the Lean Startup is a really good kind of overview of that. And you know, I think if you want to go really detailed into it, then I'd suggest maybe Steve Blank, Startup Owner's Manual.
Is that good?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of I would say it's maybe a heavier version of the Lean Startup, but and it's, you know, it's long. It's but yes, some really good ideas and case studies. So yeah, that's probably my recommendation.
Excellent. They're good. Both that needs that one or the Excellent Dividend has been recommended before. So it's brilliant to get some new ones. Shane, where can people learn a bit more about yourself and also HealthWave?
So we're online at healthwave.ie. You can, you know, read all about our service. You can watch a video of the PillPods system that we've talked about here. You know, it's hard to probably explain it on a podcast, but watching the video, you know, I think you'll be, you know, blown away by the technology behind it and just how much better a way of getting your medicines it is.
That's very cool. Just seeing in the flesh, I was lucky enough to see an operation. Seeing the flesh is the future. You only see this technology, you go, yeah, that's going to move things hugely. Shane, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Gary.
And that's a wrap for episode 71. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, every Monday I release a second episode of The Entrepreneur Experiment called The Idea Lab, where I share the best news, insights and ideas I've seen that week for entrepreneurs. It goes out every Monday at 5 a.m. and there's also an email newsletter that goes along with it. So you can join both of those on my website, mrgaryfox.com. I will see you back next week.